Welcome to the Skeptic's Guide to Emergency Medicine. Meet him, greet him, treat him, and street him. Today's date is June 5th, 2017, and I am your skeptical host, Ken Milne. The title of today's podcast is Strange Fruit, and our guest skeptic is Dr. Jerome Hoffman. He's an associate program director for the Emergency Medicine and Acute Care Conference Series, and also a professor emeritus of medicine and emergency medicine, University of California, Los Angeles. Welcome to the SGEM, Jerry.
Thank you, Ken. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, this is another SGEM Extra in a series I'm calling Legends of Emergency Medicine. And this episode will highlight some of the pioneers and leaders of our specialty. Now, there may be some people who would argue with the selection of the legends, but these are people that I look up to, people that have influenced my career. But I don't think anyone out there would not put Dr. Jerome Hoffman on the list. And the goal of the Legends of EM series is to give younger generations of emergency physicians access to some of the superstars in our field via social media. Now, the SGEMers already know a little bit about you, Jerry, from your bio, but can you give us something non-medical that you're really interested in?
Well, first of all, I have to laugh. Legends? Excuse me. that's very sweet of you. But anyway, I've had a whole life outside of medicine, both before and during my time in medicine. So maybe the most important thing is that I'm married to a painter. She's wonderful and very successful, but of course that means that she just about breaks even in terms of sales. So don't think I'm living the high life off of her. But she is a wonderful painter, and that's a big part of my life. She taught me a lot about art. I was much more interested in music than art before I ever met Annie. But I also was interested in all sorts of other things. So before I ever became a doctor, I was a graduate student in literature and in drama. I did my undergraduate in comparative literature in French, and I did sabbaticals in philosophy. So I've been looking all over the board. Before that, even, I was a student and then a post-student agitator in the 60s and a community organizer, and that I've stayed doing that for my entire career. Spent some time as an editor, a so-called editor, that had a fancy title, of the New York Times Book Review, because I started in literature, and I guess that's plenty.
Well, I you know, this has got to be one of the favorite questions I have for the people that are coming on to the show, because they've had such diverse, interesting careers. And I knew that you were into literature because I remember giving you books, but you're also a bit of a philosopher, you're into languages. I think this is one of the greatest questions, because it gives people so much more to you than just, I'm an emergency physician. That's how I define myself.
Well, you know, emergency medicine is a big field, and it encompasses so many different things. Most importantly, human relations, and a lot of ethics and morality, philosophy. So just if you want to do this job well, we have to learn how to be doctors, and we have to learn all sorts of facts. But we also, I think most people who do this well are interested in wider areas of human relations and the larger world. Social emergency medicine to me is critically important, particularly in my country. You guys are a little luckier, I think, up there, but it's also very important up there. It's just that our system is so broken here that it accentuates all the social issues. But medicine in general goes way beyond just simply facts or science. My interest in medicine has always been about the sort of the philosophy of science. How do we understand information? So that's also expansive. There's all this social stuff that is critically important to medicine and human interrelations. And not surprisingly, doctors have a long tradition of being great writers, being great musicians, being interested in much more than simply how do you take care of asthma or heart failure.
Well, you picked the theme music for this episode, and it's Strange Fruit. And I think, you know, these selections give us a window into the individual. So why did you pick Strange Fruit?
Well, first of all, it was very tough to pick. I could have picked 50 different things. I love music. I love all sorts of music. I played music as a very young boy, and I was serious about it and have played a variety of instruments, continue to play just about every day. I love music. But while medicine has so many profound aspects, one of the most important is its relation to our patients as part of a larger society. And this particular song, Strange Fruit, is a phenomenal poem by Abel Meeropol, which reminds us of the powerful social determinants that affect everything we do. And I could have picked a lot of versions of this, the very bitter, powerful version by Nina Simone, the beautiful and most famous version by Lady Day, Billie Holiday. Billie Holiday herself was a sort of a symbol of the difficulty that American society had dealing with black people who were obviously not only successful, but did something important. She was a wonderful, wonderful singer, but she became a scapegoat and a target of American judicial system as part of a larger effort to demonize drugs, demonize black people, etc. So I could have picked her. I would have loved to. She's terrific. But this version by the great iconic jazz saxophonist Sidney Bechet is just the most powerful thing I know.
Well, I enjoyed the selection and the saxophone, because did you know that I played saxophone in the high school band?
I did not know that. Were you as good as Mr. Bechet?
Oh, I don't even think he would consider it playing the saxophone. Now, did you know that there's something called the Hoffman effect? I mean, you have such an impact in the world of emergency medicine that I've heard this term used before, called the Hoffman effect. Have you heard that?
It's flattering. I hope it's flattering. I hope it's not a terrible effect. But I think, you know, sort of vaguely, but I'm sure it means different things to different people.
Well, I'm not exactly sure what it means either, but I think when people speak of the Hoffman effect, it's talking about when you give an assessment, an opinion on something, it sends ripples. Some may say shockwaves. Some even may say tsunamis through the EM world. And I'm thinking about TPA for stroke here.
Well, you know, obviously I feel lucky that I've had a platform, and I do have a lot of people tell me that they hear my voice in their ear, not just on big issues, but when they're seeing individual patients. And, you know, I've tried not to abuse that. I hope it's had a good effect. And, you know, I'm sort of proud that I've had the opportunity to talk to many, many people. I've always tried to do my best and to say things as I see them. So I hope that's useful to everybody. But, you know, what can I say?
Well, we're not doing a structured critical review, which is the usual format. So I want to keep this very personable. So one of the questions I had is, do you remember when we first met? Because I do.
Well, I was going to say, you know what, you sent me this question before, and my answer was, Ken, you got to tell us.
Well, you know, and it's interesting because I find this with all these personal legends. I mean, it's so impactful to the individual like myself who's meeting that person they look up to. But to the other person, they see these people all the time coming up to them and hello, and they're very gracious and stuff, but they don't necessarily remember that actual first time. But I do. And this is the story I'm going to tell.
Uh-oh.
It was my 40th birthday. At least this is how I'm going to remember it. We know how memories may not be accurate. But I was coming up to my 40th birthday, and my wife, Barb, yes, it's Ken and Barbie. My wife, Barb, said, you know, Ken, what do you want to do for your 40th? And I said, you know, Barb, I don't really need anything material, but what I really would like is an experience. And one experience I wanted was to learn to surf. And so she said, that's great. Why don't we go to Southern California? We'll take a family trip and we'll get you some surfing lessons. And as soon as I found out we were going to California, I said, you know what else I'd like to do? I'd like to meet Jerry Hoffman. I've been listening to him for years. And so I contacted you via email, sent you a note, and said, well, I'm going to be there for a holiday with my family for my birthday. Could I meet you? And you're like, really? Are you nuts? It's your birthday. It's your holiday. Why would you want to spend any time with me? I said, oh, I do. And you invited me up to your office. We went out to lunch to a nice little sandwich place on campus. And we talked about, you know, the differences between the Canadian and the American healthcare system. As a good, I guess, person meeting someone for the first time like that, I brought you a few gifts. I brought you a book. And I can't remember if it was Nassim Taleb's book, Black Swan, or Fooled by Randomness. It was one of the two. And I brought you some Tim Hortons coffee, very Canadian. And then I brought you a hockey shirt because you and Rick were videotaping your shows at that point. And you promised that you would put on this hockey jersey and wear it the next time. And you did. It was wonderful. At least that's the story I remember.
I do vaguely remember the T-shirt and the Tim Horton. I do remember that. The rest of it, I don't really remember. I probably had whichever of Taleb's books you brought me, I probably was nice enough not to say I already had it. but yeah, he's, you know, he, for those of your listeners who don't know, Nicholas Taleb is a trader on Wall Street, or was a trader on Wall Street, who is also very, very, very sophisticated thinker about how we understand information and how we mislead ourselves in understanding information. Wall Street, he actually was on the London Stock Exchange, but the version of it. There's often these myths that there are these great traders who figure everything out. And Taleb's books a little bit are about, start off with the debunking that notion, showing that a tremendous amount of this is by chance, has nothing to, you know, and the person who hits right becomes the hero, and the person who misses becomes the goat, and actually it changes all the time. He writes brilliantly about how we think, I think, better than anybody else. On the other hand, he is so obnoxious. This guy is so full of himself that it's almost impossible to read the books and go through them because they're so obnoxious. But they are very, very good, particularly the first one. Fooled by Randomness, I thought, was the best. Black Swan, and then a third one, almost unreadable because they're so unpleasant. He's so full of himself. I'm smart and you are not.
Well, after that experience with you, I would make the pilgrimage to ASAP and attend the Rick and Jerry show. And when I would go there, it would remind me of my youth watching the Muppet Show with Stadler and Wardoff. And there you would be critically appraising the literature in a very entertaining way. And I enjoyed every minute of it. I would come up and say hello at the end and get a picture with you. And I know I was really a fanboy.
I'm sure you were.
Well, now you move forward a number of years, and now I have the privilege of working with you on Emergency Medical Abstracts and doing the courses, and it's just been fantastic.
Well, it has been lovely for me as well, and I'm not just saying that. I think we've had a really nice relationship. We work well together. I think we think in many ways along similar lines, and so that makes it really easy. It's been a pleasure.
And so I'm a little nervous when I ask this question of my legends, my personal legends. So what was your initial impression you had of me?
Well, maybe you should be nervous. My initial impression was, of course, this has to be an act. He's trying to convince me that all Canadians really are ridiculously nice.
Yes, well, we do have a reputation, don't we?
Yes, and you've upheld it very well. I mean, how can anybody be that nice all the time? It's ridiculous.
It's time to get to the five formal questions I wanted to ask you, and so I'm going to run through those with you now. The first one was, from your perspective, what's the biggest positive change that you observed in emergency medicine?
Well, I guess I'd say two things. One is that over at the beginning, from 30, 40 years ago where I first started, there's a huge change in both internally and externally of emergency medicine being taken seriously as a specialty. And of course, we've all seen, or anybody's been around for a while has seen, that change in the larger environment, how other people look at emergency medicine. But I think more important is how emergency medicine looked at itself. And while it's, you know, it's been not a smooth course all along, the attempt to take this as a serious discipline, to understand what it is that we do, to critique what we do, I think is a really important part of the long-term change in emergency medicine. Over that long term, I think the change that I've seen is that we not only want to be important, we not only stand up and say, wait a second, we're a specialty too, but we want to get it right. And there are two big elements of that. One is what you and I do all the time, which is to try to critically appraise evidence, to be better at understanding what is really true, what is false, and what do we not know. That's really important. And emergency medicine has been a leader in that, I think, in the larger world of medicine. Given our small size, there are a few areas where we've really had outsized impact. And one of them is in the insistence that we think about what we do and not just read textbooks or listen to experts and have them tell us. The other area where emergency medicine has tried to do this right is that we have, I think, gone beyond just narrow medical issues of which drug do you use, et cetera, but to try to understand larger social issues. How is research done? What are conflicts of interest? What are the social determinants of health? How do we take care of our patients as people and human beings? How do we address palliative care, et cetera? And again, for a small specialty, and we are a small specialty, we've had big influence in all those areas, way beyond what one would expect. I joined a group called There's No Free Lunch, and then an international group called Healthy Skepticism, many years ago, which dealt with conflicts of interest. And the leaders of those groups always kept telling me, you know, it's amazing. Emergency medicine is 50% of our group, even though you're 1% of the world of medicine or 5% or whatever it is. And it's not just in there, but in all these areas, critical appraisal, et cetera. I think we have done a pretty good job as a specialty of trying to understand what really matters. And obviously, that's not a one size fits all. Obviously, there are many influences in emergency medicine that are no different than anywhere else. But I think many of us, and I don't mean leaders, I mean the group, has really tried to understand the bigger world. And that's, to me, is very important.
So what's the biggest negative change that you've seen in the world of emergency medicine?
Well, it's the same negative change that we've seen everywhere in medicine, which is profit-driven medicine. This is worse in the U.S. than it is probably anywhere else. But I don't think you guys are immune to it. The ways in which so much of what we do is driven by the attempt to make money, to profits, and put profits ahead of patients, whether that's conflicts of interest in pharmaceutical industry and device industry and EHRs that are all about billing and have nothing to do with patient care, and the many other things that I'm not even going to go into, which anybody who's thought about this obviously knows, the ways in which money takes precedence over what's good for our individual patients and what's good for the public health has always been there, but it's far worse today in my mind than it used to be. And I always try to understand that this generation is going to hell, this younger generation is going to hell. You can find quotations like that from 50 years ago, 100 years ago, 300 years ago, 700, 1800, the Greeks, they're all talking about. So I don't want to overstate this. Maybe it's just the natural inclination as you get older to get crotchety and think things are getting worse. But I think in this case, it is true. The dominance of money in medicine is at a height even far greater than it used to be. And I think it's a tremendous threat, not only to our patients, not only to our healthcare and our populations, but also to us. It changes who we are, unless we're really careful, in ways that demean the specialty, demean medicine, demean us as a profession, and lead to all sorts of dissatisfaction and burnout. And unless we're really careful and try to remember that we got into this not because we wanted to get rich. I mean, it's a good job. A lot of people, we might not have gotten into it if they only paid us what they paid teachers. We might have become teachers if they'd paid them a lot more. I mean, there are a lot of good things you can do. But I fundamentally think most people who went into medicine realized that there are a lot easier ways to make money. If that was really your goal, this was a bad choice. We got into it because we really, there was something tremendously alluring about the opportunity to do something important. And it's easy to lose sight of that in in the face of not only the tremendous perverse incentives that are that face us all the time, but also the threats to your daily practice and the feeling good about it. I hope that people will continue to see how much is wonderful about practicing medicine and continue to try to resist these incentives to do the wrong thing for the wrong reason. But in any case, I think that's a big problem that we all face, and we have to each individually address and hopefully address on a larger scale as a specialty and as a society.
Well, you've made a number of contributions to emergency medicine. Very tangible ones. I don't want to use the word significant because I know how significance can be distorted, but you have made all these contributions. This might be a really hard question then. What's the one you're most proud of?
It's an impossible question. I don't want to guess what my contributions are, but for me personally, I've taken tremendous pride and joy in my ability to teach my own students, the people I've mentored. I have a lot of people that I continue to be very close with and have a wonderful relationship with, who I had the opportunity to mentor as students or residents or fellows, etc., or people from far away like you, that that's really important to me. And it's really important to me, and I hope I've made a contribution in that way. I think some of the research I've done has been useful and important, and I take pride in it. Probably less important, but I think, it's not just Nexus. There's a bunch of things I've done that I think have helped to change the way in which we practice, and I like that. And I also have had a role, I hope, in advocacy in emergency medicine for things that matter, not just TPA. And TPA had nothing to do with TPA. It had to do with conflict of interest and the distortion of science. So advocacy in terms of science and advocacy in terms of social issues that are important, I've had a role there. But I guess if I had to pick one, Ken, probably where, maybe not the most gratifying. I can't, that would be, it might be a different question. But the most important, I think it's that I've been given a podium from which I can speak to thousands of emergency docs. And I hope, and I think from feedback I've gotten, that that's had an influence on the larger world. And again, we talked about that right at the beginning. For me, it's been tremendously gratifying and tremendously rewarding. And I hope it's had an effect on, that Hoffman effect you talked about. I hope that's been useful to people.
Well, you used the word podium, so I'm going to turn that question around or ask you to use this podium and say, what advice would you give to someone who's interested in going into emergency medicine as a career? Because people who listen to this program, some of them are medical students, and they may be applying to residency. So what would you give as advice to someone who's interested in seeking a career in emergency medicine?
Well, I don't think there's any one career that fits everybody, or that even most people are limited to one possible choice. There are a lot of possible choices. I'm glad I chose to be an emergency doc from many choices I had, because I think it provides us with the opportunity to really, to both to do good things and to feel great about ourselves all the time. Medicine in general is complex today. There are lots of threats to our individual sanity, to our work, etc. But if you concentrate on what's wrong, you will have lots of trouble. But if you concentrate on what's right about what we do, emergency medicine is a phenomenal field. We get to help people every day, and not just one or two. Our number needed to treat to change somebody's experience of their illness and their fright is one. It's a number needed to treat of close to one. Almost everybody we can really, really help. And that's far, far more than the number of people we save, whose lives we save. I think students often are attracted to emergency medicine because of big procedures and big serious illness. And those get pretty routine pretty quickly. They're usually very easy. They're very algorithmic. You take care of them. It's not a big deal. Once you learn how to crack a chest, you've cracked a chest. It's not that big a deal. But What is important is how you talk to human beings and how you bind their anxiety. Everyone who comes into us, whether they have something very major or something very minor, thinks they're having an emergency and they're scared. And if you ever go to some place where you're not particularly welcome or comfortable, you go to a courtroom, for example, it's scary when the bailiff says, "All rise." It's like, "Oh my God, what's happening here?" The bailiff isn't scared. The people who work there, they're comfortable there. We're comfortable in an ER. We sometimes forget that for the patient, it's not a comfortable place. Only staff can enter. Don't go here. Don't touch. You know, it's like a big deal. And they're there for a reason because they're already scared. And we can change that so wonderfully. We can make them, we can change their experience of this and help them in powerful ways. So I think if you, it's a great choice, but I want to suggest that focus on the things that are wonderful. It's wonderful for all sorts of reasons. It's intellectually fascinating. I'd hate to be a rheumatologist because I'd love to know everything there is to know about my field, but then what after the third week? What do you do then? I mean, we have it's endlessly fascinating. I've seen everything there is in the world over 40 years, and yet it's still interesting every day because, you know, you're still challenged all the time. We're dealing with unknowns all the time. What fun. And human relations all the time. And being part of a team all the time. And that's one other thing I'd give as advice. Remember that whatever you go do in medicine, but particularly in emergency medicine, you're a leader of your team. And what you do really has an enormous impact on the culture of the place you work. And there are places where you go into the emergency room and everybody's working together and the patients are considered the people we have to help. And they're looked at with affection and care. We see this as an opportunity to do good things. And there are other places you go into where everybody's unhappy and the patients are the enemy and the patients are only a potential lawsuit and demanding and how do I get them out of here? And everywhere in between, of course, it's usually not 100% one way or the other. But so much of that has to do with what the emergency doc leads, how the emergency doc leads. And so creating a culture where we really care about what we're doing, where we get joy in every interaction, even the difficult ones, where we get joy in the interactions with each other, is phenomenal. And finally, I just say, take care of yourself. And that's part of it. If you're not going to take care of yourself if you're always angry and threatened and feeling that the next patient could be a terrible thing happening. It's natural when you start to worry about, am I doing the right thing? And get help when you need it, because that's the best way to bind that anxiety is not to do tests that don't help you, but to get help when you don't know what to do. Over time, you'll know more and more and more what to do. You won't ever know everything. So there's always a place for getting help. But in that process, concentrate on all the wonderful things. Don't concentrate on the horrors. Yes, it's a very hard job. Yes, physically it can be very hard. While you're working, it can be really, really hard. Emotionally, it can be hard. Yes, there are threats to us. And then the system, particularly in the U.S., makes it even worse, particularly today with these crazy EHRs and all that stuff. There are ways in which you can focus on what's bad. And if you do that, you're going to be miserable. But if you focus on the joy you get from doing the right thing and from helping people every day and from having good relationships, it overwhelms those harms. And so take care of yourself. Don't overwork. Don't make yourself miserable. Do what you love. Find joy in what you do, because there's plenty of joy to be found. You know, to me, those are the things I hope people who are starting out will be able to remember as they go through. And I guess the last thing is, remember that this is a fabulous profession. When I say profession, I mean something where we profess to have knowledge and expertise that people need and they can't get for themselves. And we also promise that we're going to use that in their interest first. And always keeping that in mind, because sometimes their interests and our interests conflict. And it's easy to do what's in our interest. Do everything so nobody will be mad at you. Even though it's bad for them, don't do it, because it ends up being much better for them and also for you as a human being if you can be true to the creed of the profession.
Well, we do have a social contract with our patients, and it's a privilege. It's a privilege to be allowed to be involved in their life so intimately in their time of need. And I love your philosophy of that number needed to treat has got to be close to one in what we're doing.
We pretty much agree on this, I'm sure.
All right. The fifth question from the formal section of this show was, what do you see emergency medicine being in the next decade? Where do you see it, you know, happening? What do you think it'll look like?
So I'm going to punt this back to you, Ken, but not just to you, but to everybody who's listening. You know, that's up to you guys. The rest of us, us old geezers who maybe will be around to see it or not, are counting on you. There are many directions that emergency medicine and medicine in general could go. In my country, I hope there will be a huge and unobstructed, unblockable community, public effort to change our healthcare system for the better. It's in desperate need. Our healthcare system is breaking the bank in our society, and it's not getting very good results, and it's enormously unequal and causing huge problems with overtreatment in those who can pay and undertreatment in those who can't pay. And it's a disaster right now and waiting to be an even bigger disaster. Emergency medicine is a part of that. It will have an impact on that. But what we do is only part of the larger what the society does. So I'm hoping there will be huge efforts to make social changes that are critically, critically important. Within the world of emergency medicine itself, I hope we'll continue to understand the special role we have and the ways we can contribute to individual patients and patient health and the public health. I'm hoping that we will go away from try to limit the conflicts of interest and perverse interests that make physicians do the wrong thing. There's a whole variety of things. I don't know what's going to happen. There are enormous forces in favor of profit-driven medicine, which are also in favor of the things that can affect each and every one of us as individuals in perverse ways. And I hope we'll resist that. I hope we as a community will get more and more the sense that it's really important to take care of our individual patients, but it's also important to be part of something larger, and that not everybody's going to contribute in the same way, but we have a very big role to play in the larger issues of emergency medicine, medicine, society. People still respect us, and we have to play those roles. It's not up to me. It's not up to Ken Milne. It's up to you guys listening to say, this is my baby, and I'm going to play a part in making it better. I don't know where it's going to go. I hope I can see very diverse pathways making things much worse, becoming a technological specialty, and that just does more and more and more of everything and makes lots of money. I can see it being a social specialty that dramatically impacts the health of our population, as well as our individual patients, and everything in between. And I am hopeful that you guys out there will do the right thing. And not everybody will do the same thing, but I hope that we will have a really big role to play in healing our societies.
Well, if you're listening to this right now, you've had the challenge put out there. What do you think EM will look like in the next 10 years? You can post your comments and feedbacks to the blog, and we'd be very interested to hear what people out there are thinking emergency medicine will look like in the next 10 years. The last thing I wanted to ask you was an open-ended question. Is there anything else that you think is important that the SGEM listeners know or that you want to discuss?
You know, I think we've talked about much that's greatly important to me, and I don't really have anything to add. I could just sort of repeat all the things I've been saying. I've had a wonderful, wonderful career. I've had the opportunity to do things that give me great pleasure and from which I take joy every day. And that's in part because I've gotten to do different things, and I'm not always doing the same thing. I get to do other things that interest me. I've tried to keep my life rounded so that it's not all about just medicine or even within medicine, just one thing. But that's for me. Everybody is different, and we each have our own path to follow. I would only say again that there is enormous opportunity in what we do to take joy every day, every year, over a career. There's the possibility of making from this a wonderful life. And then throw in that the society, as part of that contract you talks about, rewards us so well. They give us autonomy and independence and authority and responsibility, and these are all great. And they give us money and respect. Don't get lost, because there are also, this is a hard job, and it's easy to focus on what's hard about it. But if you remember why you love it and you focus on those things, you can make this wonderful, not only personally for yourself, but for the people you affect, and you affect so, so many people. So, you know, I guess that's the most important thing I'd hope your listeners will hear, is that we each have the great opportunities in a hard job, and we also have great responsibility in our larger community and our societies. And I don't want to tell anyone what you must do, and I don't think everybody must do the same thing, but if you can keep your eye on those prizes, you can make a career that's both personally very rewarding, but also useful and important. And what could be better than that?
Well, you have had an impact on so many people, including myself. And I think by listening to this show, you're going to have an impact on a whole bunch of more people because of what you've said today. And so thank you very much. I really appreciate you coming on and sharing your story.
Thank you so much, Ken. It's been a pleasure.
Now, at the end of every show, I have a tagline, the Skeptic's Guide to Emergency Medicine tagline. And I think I've told you this before. You helped me, in a way, come up with this tagline, because I remember listening to a lecture that you gave once, and you threw out something at the end saying, hey, don't believe me. You should be skeptical, even if you heard it from me. And so that's where I came up with the SGEM tagline. So it would be amazing if you could read the SGEM tagline.
I would be glad to read it, but I have to tell you, you know, memory is fragile, Ken, but I think this is a direct quote. I've been saying this for years. And that is to remember to be skeptical of everything you hear, even if you heard it from me. Now, I'm going to change it. The change you did make was, even if you heard it on the Skeptic's Guide to Emergency Medicine.
Beautiful. Thank you so much.